Vishnu Sahasranama, number 128, Janardana, a well-known name by which Krishna addresses, which Arjuna addresses Krishna twice in the Bhagavad Gita. Jana means person. Ardana has different meanings. It is quite different meanings. One meaning is that he, or the main meaning is that he destroys the bad. Persons who are bad, he destroys them. It also means that he gives joy to the good. So for the devotees, he is a source of great joy, and for the non-devotees, he is death personified. You see, in Krishna's pastime, that the same Krishna who gives so much joy to his devotees, just by thinking of him, the demons became afraid or upset. Today also, we find that there are people who, just by hearing about Krishna, they become upset. And there are some people who are so much inimical to the personality of Godhead that they dedicate their life to convincing people that he doesn't exist. Not that they simply disbelieve in the existence of God, but they're very much against anyone even believing them. So they get due reward for their spirited efforts to propagate atheism, what they think is for the benefit of the world, they get that benefit. And we can all join together later on, talking about how there's no God in a certain place not very much. We can all get together again in the nether regions and say, there's no God, one of them. Which by the Janardana. He punishes through his agency, the material nature, through Yamadutas, assigned the job of giving suffering to others. But Krishna himself personally, Vinashaya Sadhishvatam, personally destroys those who are wicked. He doesn't lead at all to material nature. He can do, but he also personally destroys the wicked. He comes into this world Paritranaya Sadhinam, to fully deliver the sadhus, the saintly people. So his destruction of the wicked, he's personally doing that. It's not necessary for him to do so. He can do so through his various reasons. But he personally does so out of affection for his devotees. You could say, well, Kamsa, he's causing so much distress. But anyway, he'll die in due course of time. So just wait for him to die. And then there won't be any more Kamsa. But Krishna doesn't wait for him to die. He personally did. And personally believed. To his father and mother and so many others who are oppressed by him. So Krishna either personally through his various agents, the material energies, the earthquakes, famines, tsunamis, she gives suffering to the wicked, to the Yamadutas, and also Krishna, to his direct and personal interests, particularly at Kurukshetra. Krishna arranged for the destruction of so many bad elements via the agency of Bhima and Arjuna. I'm arranging for all these people to be killed, but you should simply be the instrument for my hands. So, Bhima and Arjuna, after the battle, there was some discussion between Bhima and Arjuna. Who is most instrument? Who is the biggest Parantapa, scorcher of the enemy? Who has played the leading role? Bhima has killed all the sons of Peter. And then Arjuna had killed almost far many more soldiers, and especially Arjuna killed the commander-in-chief of the army, Bhishma, Drona, between Bhishma and Drona, both of them killed Karna. So it was a discussion. But then Krishna showed actually, it was all me. I was standing on the chariot holding the reins, but it was all me. It was all done by me. Both of you can take the credit, but actually it was all done by me. So Krishna destroys the wicked, and he protects people from the wicked. Without killing punishment, And even now, just like that question came yesterday, frequently asked questions, that even though we are performing devotional service, we are attempting to perform devotional service, we still have so many sinful propensities in our mind, and we can't seem to get free from them. But we can remember Janai, that he will protect us from the wicked tendencies in our mind, so that we don't fall down into madness or things that are terrible. So, another meaning of the name Janai is one to whom others go to get something. So, then why people approach God? To get something. Give me this, give me that, give me something else. So, Krishna is the appropriate person to approach if you want them. Because everything comes from him, everything is controlled by him. So instead of going to lesser persons, such as the demigods, you can approach Krishna directly for any case that you desire. Generally, people approach demigods for material boons. But they should know that ultimately the person who awards the boon is Krishna. The demigods have no independent character to them. So that is your approach to Krishna directly. If you want them, and everyone wants them. Even if we want liberation from this world, that cannot be attained without the blessing of Krishna. So Krishna is the proper approach if we have some desire, and everyone has some desire. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he taught us to pray not for any mundane need, not for any spiritual boon, even not even a spiritual boon outside of service to himself. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us to pray only for the opportunity to serve Krishna without any personal image. Prayer of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Not Ananya Janam. Nasindarim Tabitam Bhava Vishakam. Anajanmani Janmani Sharev Avatar Shira. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches us to pray not for any worldly boon, not for wealth, position, beautiful women, intellectual achievement, not for liberation from this world, but only the opportunity to serve Krishna without any personal knowledge. So this is the proper way to pray to Krishna. Pray means it's not simply a request. You may ask someone, please go to this boy. The mother may ask her child, please go to this boy and get a practice. Mother is good at you. Say such things to your children anymore. But also, this combative. I couldn't understand it even when I was growing up in the world. What was it like? Anyway, I'm just giving that as an example. So that is the request. But going to Krishna, it's completely different. We are in the position of a beggar. We have nothing to give Krishna. It's not that among equals you may request something and then you expect someone to give something back to you later. With Krishna, we have nothing to give him whatsoever. We can only take from him. Of course, it is his kindness that he does accept from us. Atram, pushpam, halam, vayam, soup, flower, leaf, and water. Even though, intrinsically, we can't give anything. We can only give to us. So, what is the position when someone asks something from someone to, for whom they can do nothing? That is the position of a beggar. You can beg from them. Of course, the beggar, he may praise the donor. So at least that much. We are all taking from Krishna. In this material world, we are all utilizing the gifts of Krishna. Food, water, air, light. At the very least, we should show gratefulness. Is even divided. So Krishna, he's not a beggar, he's a giver, he's an inexhaustible source of everything, and he gives to everyone else. Nityana Sadanam Chaitanya Chaitanam Eko Bahu Yoga Vishnu. Krishna is that one among the eternal living beings, he is that one who is giving to us and supplying the needs of us. He has no need, and but he is supplying the needs of us. But he begs also. He asks, Hatrang, Hatrang, Halang, Jaya. You give to me. I want something from you. We cannot philosophically speaking, philosophically, we have nothing to give to him. But still, he takes the role of one who wants something. He wants food, flower, leaf, and water offered with love. So Krishna is also a beggar. Krishna, there's nothing outside the scope of what Krishna does and Krishna can do, especially in Vishnu Sahasranama, Vishnu Sahasranama, the magnificence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is underlined in all of the discussions of his name. But among the Gauriyas, they don't deny his magnificence, but they qualify, they find the most magnificent quality of Krishna is that he acts as if an ordinary person to give pleasure to him. The sweetness of Krishna is emphasized by the Gaura Vaishnava. Krishna is well known to be a thief. The position of a thief is not good. No one will praise a thief. But Krishna is praised for stealing. That all Vaishnavas will accept that. Some Vaishnavas have difficulty with Krishna's apparent lasciviousness, which means lustiness. But Gauriyas, they delight in understanding that Krishna's apparently lusty affairs with the gopis, that is, ananda chinmaya rasa, manifestation, all blissful, all spiritual, tasty, spiritually delicious activities of transcendence. So Krishna is a thief, he's a lumbar, debauchee. Krishna is a liar, he treats women very badly. All these bad qualities of Krishna, they are his best qualities. If we can understand, taking off our material morality, material morality is important. Within this world, it's not good to be a thief, a liar, torturer of women, a debauchee, all these are very bad things. But in Krishna, because everything Krishna does is for his own pleasure, the most selfish person imaginable, beyond imagination. But his real pleasure is giving pleasure to his devotees. So all these activities get to be understood in that regard. Now, also, Vishnu Sahasranam praises his magnificence, ruler of everything. But here also, he is approached by his devotees to what they want. But Krishna himself, he's also a beggar. So how can he be a beggar when he has got everything? He is the one to whom everyone goes. For everything, whatever we need, we can get from Krishna. Although, again, we should follow Krishna in the path of his example. We pray only to the opportunity to serve him without any team of motivation other than to serve him for his sake. All the bad things, all the worst things in human society, we find Krishna also good. But when Krishna does it, it's utmost glorious. It's like in Vedic culture. To be a beggar, well, one can be a beggar. There are two kinds of beggars. One kind is a Kidambi, or Brahmin, or Brahmachari, who begs just what he needs to support the body, and that also for the sake of giving the opportunity to others to perform pious activities. When the Brahmana is begging, he doesn't really need to beg, but he does so to give the opportunity to others to perform pious activities. Otherwise, he can pick up some grain from the field, or not make any effort whatsoever for anything for personal maintenance, and just rely on what Krishna arranges to come to him. So there's one kind of beggar, and there's the other who's simply indigent, nothing to offer society. Brahmana begs that it is true that he has so much to offer society in the realm of knowledge. But there's simply someone who's poverty stricken and begging to maintain their body. Well, such persons can be offered some alms also. They're not in the same category. But this kind of beggar is not considered. But Krishna also says that one who carries a dead body is considered the very lowest possible profession, because they have to take out their bodies. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also did the Haridas Thakur. To sweep and clean the sweeper class, that is not the very lowest class. Really, to some people, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also does Indusha temple cleaning. What about taking out food? Removing. Nowadays we have all these arrangements for persons cooling water, which is actually sinful from the Shastra, not cooling water. But that's the, that is the way to do it. If you do it in your own poop in your back garden, you'll get arrested for the intrusion. That's the leading culture. Go away from the house, not in the house. Perhaps school in the house, you know, the whole house is completely contaminated. You can't even live in the house within the food or anything. So, in the cities, people have to take that out. So that's considered a very low profession. But what about this? Shingatam Sakasa Krishna Punya Sadhana Yantas Dhoya Bhadran Vidhinoti Sivitam. Krishna, being the very best friend of his devotees, cleanses from their heart all the inauspicious and nasty things. For those who hear topics about him. So, the material desires within the heart, they are worthless. There can be very horrible desires within the heart, but Krishna cleans that out. So Krishna, he takes all kinds of what would normally be considered low or immoral roles. When Krishna does so, completely glorious. So, about him being a beggar, begging from his devotees, especially in the very heart of Gaudiya culture, which we don't discuss very much because it's so intimate. Very easy to misconstrue that the very heart of Gaudiya culture is how Krishna becomes subordinate to Radha and begs her in various ways. Give me your association, give me your lotus feet, and Krishna is a beggar. Even now, the greatest Jayadeva Goswami himself, who is writing, well, he couldn't write. He found himself in the revelation of Krishna's pastimes as he was compiling them. No, that wasn't there. Yes, that's the idea. And yes, that being so, he found he couldn't compile, he couldn't write it. In his meditation, he saw this, but this is too much. So Krishna himself had to come and write it. Yes, that is my position. I am in this respect a devil. So the next name, name 129, is Veda. Veda means knowledge, and specifically means the knowledge that is presented to human society by Krishna, so that one can come to know. Veda is eternal. No. Who is the author of the Vedas? Vyasa says, no. Compiler. Vyasa means one who is divine. So he's divine. Sorts it all out so that we can answer. Otherwise, Veda is eternal. Knowledge is eternal. Knowledge Krishna is eternal, so knowledge about Krishna is eternal. Krishna and his energy are eternal. So that is non-different from Krishna. Of course, in one sense, everything is non-different from Krishna, but especially the Vedas, because that is knowledge about Krishna. Vedas are meant to lead people. The object of knowledge in the Vedas is Krishna. So the Vedas are non-different from Krishna, to be respected as much as Krishna. In the Mahabharata statement directly corroborates that the Vedas are Krishna. Sarve Veda, Sarva Vidya, Sashastraha, Sarve Yajaha, Sarva Vidyacha Krishna. All the Vedas, all the Vidya, Veda means knowledge, and Vidya also means knowledge. But Vidya is often used separately to mean knowledge about a particular subject. So all the Vedas, all the Vidyas, all the Shastras, all the Shastras, all the Yajnas, and all the offerings are Krishna. So the next name 130, Vedavit, which is the Vedas, and we can know of it. Name comes as So one who knows the Vedas, there are many people known the Vedas, actually, or a Veda. One who knows one Veda, according to the Veda, he's known as the Rig, Vedi, or Yajna, Vedi, Dharma, Vedi, this is Vedi. And one may be a Vedi, you know, two Vedas, two Vedi, Chakra Vedi. Means someone who has learned by heart one of the Vedas, two of the Vedas, three of the Vedas, four of the Vedas. That doesn't necessarily mean to understand the meaning. Simply to learn by rote, that doesn't mean that one, well, in one sense one knows it, but even someone who doesn't know a word of Sanskrit, if they have full devotion to Krishna, they can be the real knower of the Vedas. And certainly Krishna is the real knower of the Vedas. He also has devotion to Krishna. He is Krishna. Devotion to Krishna. So Krishna knows the true meaning of the Vedas. The Vedas are manifested from breathing of Narayana. They are manifested in this world. via Brahma, via Devi Devi, receive manifest various portions of the Vedas, Anishad, and then everyone gets to be interpreting them. Maybe there are some different ideas and philosophies, some of them theistic, some of them atheistic, some of them semi-theistic. But the actual meaning of the Vedas is revealed by Krishna himself. There's so many different arguments of the meaning of the Vedas. When Krishna comes himself and explains, then the actual meaning is real. Otherwise, to understand the Vedas, the words of the Vedas can be very difficult. But Krishna makes everything clear. Now, another meaning of some parts of the Vedas, they may seem to be contradictory or impossible, but Krishna understands everything. And he also inspires certain people within the heart to manifest. But even certain people who don't fully understand the Vedas, by their devotion to the Vedas, they are blessed with some insight. Such as, for instance, the Mimamsakas, who explain the Mimamsakas, it's the Purva Mimamsa, or the first part of Mimamsa means deliberation. So they come to the conclusion that one should study the Vedas and perform yajnas and live a pious life and live happily in this world. So that's a stupid conclusion. But it is offered in the Vedas. That offer is there. And those who accept, but those who accept that as the ultimate conclusion of the Vedas, they have not understood the Vedas. And there is the Uttaramimam, the next or the better, higher deliverance that one should try to be liberated from this world, this world is full of suffering, so one should try to be liberated. But the Purva Mimamsa, they also present the hermeneutical tools or the interpretive methods which all followers of the Vedas accept. Or understanding the Vedas. So Krishna reveals to them some part of the knowledge of the Vedas, even though they don't fully understand it. But to fully understand it, Krishna himself. Not to understand it. Krishna himself, Bhagavad Gita, and who has vaguely asked, gives us Srimad Bhagavatam. So you have to hear from the Vedas from a Vaishnava. Vedvyas gave the Bhagavatam, which is suitable for Kali Yuga. In this Kali Yuga, the Vedas are not very suitable. People are too stupid, or short lives. Most of the Vedas are lost. Whatever is there is mostly misinterpreted. Even if there is some good interpretation, there's no proper parampara to explain that, therefore, in Kali Yuga, the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is not, the Srimad Bhagavatam is more conducive, of course, for us to study to understand the essence of the Vedas. And not only is it more conducive, it's not like a poor substitute, but rather, all the Vedas culminate in the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam. Vedvyas is the reincarnation of man, he has a shade of it, ultimately, a shade of it. He gave us this knowledge, the actual knowledge of the Buddha. In the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Vedavit means he's the knower of the Vedas, without any doubt or error or misinterpretation, if he understands the Krishna from other sources. So, another meaning is he who spreads the knowledge of the Vedas, simply because to know it is not very helpful. It has to be broadcast in human society for the benefit of others. So Krishna personally speaks to Bhagavad Gita, and he arranges for his devotees to spread this knowledge within human society, without which the devotees cannot be useful to anyone. So, name 131. Avyangaha. Vyangam is an imperfection. Just like anga. Anga means a part of the body. And if a part of the body is imperfect, just like one leg might be longer than another, or one leg might be just debilitated, like very little muscle or something like that. The imperfect limbs, or by extension, any imperfection of any kind. So Krishna is one symptom of Krishna. There is no imperfection in Krishna. Not in his form, there is no imperfection in Krishna. Everything about Krishna, from his toes up to his head, all of his limbs are, what do you say, perfectly formed? He formed them. Form is eternal. Actually, the gopis, they think this, that Brahma, he has made Krishna's form very perfectly. They did a good job, but he did a very bad job, Brahma. He's not a perfect creator because he put eyelids on our eyes by which we blink. And when we're blinking, we can't see Krishna. There's no imperfection in Krishna. He's so perfect that those devotees can simply desire to fill their eyes at every moment with the vision of Krishna. Not only is there no imperfection, that's what the negative perspective, but whatever is imaginable and beyond the imagination, that is Krishna's form. This is a very form of perfection. And if we see in this world some very good-looking man or woman, we can understand that that is simply some representation of the beauty, that is Radha and Krishna. There's no imperfection in Krishna. In his character and personality, also, to imagine or to ascribe any imperfection to Krishna is only possible due to our own imperfection. There's no imperfection. Just like people may think there's something wrong with Krishna, he reduced Arjuna, who was protesting that he didn't want to do it. Krishna induced Arjuna to kill his gurus. Krishna induced Arjuna to kill Karna, when Karna was in the defenseless position. It's in Duryodhana to kill Duryodhana in an improper way. So we may ascribe imperfection to this, but the devotees say very happily describe, oh yes, and Bhima and Duryodhana were fighting, and the fight was going on, there was no way to, and Krishna, he slapped his thigh to indicate to Bhima, now you hit it below the belt, and Bhima immediately cracked his thigh against all rules of fighting. The devotees were very, very happy to hear. This is Krishna's perfection. Just see, he doesn't eat. Induce Bhima to break the rules of fighting so that Duryodhana could be destroyed. So that, in another sense, he also glorifies Duryodhana by doing so, because Duryodhana should not be killed by any other way. Had to be killed. But Krishna, he is willing to accept the slurs of the non-devotees for the sake of delivering his devotees. Devotees who realize this, they're not afraid, they don't feel embarrassed to discuss such subject matters. Of course, among non-devotees who are envious and offensive of Krishna, we may not want to discuss this very much, because it is this understanding of Krishna as bhakta-bhakta. There's so many names, but maybe this is the most important of all Krishna. Everything he does out of affection for Krishna devotees. So he'll break all the rules, and he's not bound by any rules anyway. So we may not want to discuss this. I mean, people are so far away from understanding the principle of love for Krishna that they would even criticize Krishna. But among devotees, we may discuss Krishna. Not only is he free from imperfection, and any accusations against him are all simply motivated by ignorance and envy, but rather those things which two foolish people appear to be imperfect, and which for others to do would be imperfect, rather that is Krishna's perfection. And this is how the devotees understand. This is not mere word juggling, this is the transcendental perspective, the perspective of reality. Reality is Krishna, everything he does is good. Even if it seems to be bad to others, even if millions of people sign a petition that Krishna is immoral and imperfect, the devotees know that Krishna is perfect. And they can say whatever they like, but Krishna is the supreme controller. He is the arbiter of reality. We are all subordinate to him. Even the mass opinion of millions of jivas makes absolutely no bearing on Krishna's being perfect in all respects. And any estimation of him being imperfect in any way is our crass imperfection. If we see imperfection in Krishna, we should understand that we are wrong, not that Krishna is wrong, we are wrong. No imperfection in Krishna. This also means that he's beyond the reach of the senses, the mundane senses, which are imperfect. The mundane senses are beset by dhamdhamad vipralipta karana patha, the imperfection of materially conditioned persons, the tendency to make mistakes, tendency to illusion, cheating propensity, and imperfect. So with these defects, one cannot understand Krishna, who is all perfect, by the imperfect senses we can understand Krishna. In relation to the previous name, Krishna's Vedavit. Vedavit. He is the Vedas, he is the knower of the Vedas. So, in the Vedas, there is also no imperfection. All the components of the Veda, or that by which the Vedas technically understood. Chanda, Kalpa, and Yuhti, Vicharanam, all these different. There's no imperfection in the setup of the Vedas. Everything is complete and perfect. And Krishna knows them fully well also. Yeah, he also, he manifests his potential. There's no deficiency. Therefore, in the Sanskrita language, perfectly meant, perfectly, as Srila Prabhupada would offer. Sometimes he would give an example of the imperfection of the English language in being non-phonetic. P-U-T. The spelling P-U-T is pronounced put, and the spelling B-U-T should therefore be pronounced put, but of course it's pronounced but. And you also have B-U-W-T, which is also pronounced but. But, it means something else. But there are all kinds of irregularities in English language. Perfect language, proper language. Every language can be purified by glorifying Krishna. And Krishna is especially perfect for glorifying Krishna. He knows the Vedas, he knows imperfection in Krishna, he knows that any imperfection in the Sanskrit language itself. Hare Krishna. No? Is there any question? Yes, when Krishna entered the wrestling arena, different people saw him in different ways. As we uncover our relationship with Krishna, how shall we see Him? Those who are worshippers of Vishnu in Vaikuntha, they all tend to see Him in a very similar way, as the Supreme, as the King. Those who enter into Ayodhya, or Dwarka, or Vrindavan, they see Krishna differently according to their relationship with Him. So the same Krishna is seen very differently by Yashoda and by Radha. Same Krishna, but seen very differently. There's no imperfection, rather that is the perfection of seeing Krishna is to see Him according to Swarasati Siddhi, which is technical name, according to one's own personal inclination to serve. But that's Swarasati Siddhi, that's in the perfect state. Now for us, it's very good to hear Krishna's greatness, His majesty, His opulence, and a little spice
also.
Just like in a meal, there should be some vegetables and dal. That's the main nourishing part. And there's some spice also. There's more spice than vegetables. Sometimes we do. Then it becomes not very healthy for us. So, in our present stage, we need to hear about the greatness of Krishna. And some indications we can hear from the very highest level, topmost professionals, those who are so much absorbed in Krishna that they are not at all aware of his greatness. So that we can hear. And then later, we may progress to that level. The greatness of Krishna is forgotten, and only the sweetness of Krishna. But at this stage, it is better for us to hear of the greatness of Krishna with some understanding that even beyond his majesty is the sweetness of the personal relationship. Yeah, Vedic exists. It's knowledge exists eternally. With any object, there is knowledge about it. Just like this is a microphone. And as long as this microphone exists, the fact that it is a, if the main body is a dark gray color, there's certain facts about it. It's written down, not written down. Just by its very existence, it's tattva. There is tattva gyan in relationship. Just because it is that. Tattva means that-ness. And tattva gyan means knowledge of that which makes an object or entity that which makes it what it is, which is inseparable from it. So Krishna is eternal, and knowledge of him and his eternal energy, that is called Veda. So that's eternal also. Whether or not someone knows it, teaches it, broadcasts it, it always exists. Therefore it's called, the Veda is called Apurusha. It is not made by any person. It just naturally exists in relationship to Krishna, eternally. Vedic knowledge always exists, and it is broadcast in human society to a few, not to everyone, to those who are interested in it. Yeah, Vedic knowledge manifests in different times and through different individuals. Yeah. And different parts of Vedic knowledge manifest to different individuals also. How can we tell if Vedic knowledge is authentic? Veda is, Srila Prabhupada often translates as revealed knowledge. And is revealed in the heart of Brahma, Kene Brahma Hridaya Adi Bhavaya. That is, portions of the Vedic knowledge are revealed to various rishis. That's what a rishi means. One who mantra drashta, one who sees, as it were. He becomes aware of certain mantras. And then they present that to their disciples. It's revelation. Now, So the Madhva school particularly is very, not very much like in Revelation, so only one already there. Shruti means Shruti. Shruti means the Veda, the real one, and Shruti means that which is developed from that. But of course, Madhva's realization itself is all explanation of Shruti. Even to be able to explain it the way Madhva did, that's also one kind of revelation. Although we use all the basic, the standard basic hermeneutical tools. What is accepted as Veda? That is also that which is accepted by tradition, long-standing tradition. From our perspective, being here in the material world, we have to accept knowledge, even though knowledge is knowledge, but we are ignorant in lacking in knowledge. So we accept that which is accepted by since time immemorial by all the followers of the Buddha. There's no invasive Shruti which makes it so commanding. Evidential, suitable as evidence. Yeah. All followers of the Vedas are just, even though they have completely different interpretations of it, but they all accept it. And many of them accept other texts have been commanded, that is considered evidence. So the Vedanta text, that is considered commanded. For the Vaishnava, especially the story of Srimad Bhagavatam, Samana Mamana. But definitely only for the glory of Sri Ganga Sarasamya, because it's not even essential. So, another of those very big topics. It is epistemology on hermeneutics. But it is, yes, it is accepted. In time immemorial, there have been times when there is a, this is a very, very, very good topic. Therefore, in this Kali Yuga, we accept what the Atma says. Yes, the whole scope of Vedic knowledge is vast, but what the Atma says, that is accepted. And then, Vyasa Vedi Madhishthina. Alright, let's go. Otherwise, this is not for the next Kali Yuga. We're going to go back to God as before. Any other questions? Say these things, and some of them might get very, very angry. You suggest that the Atma may not know. Please tell us. We want to suggest that. The Gaudiya Siddhanta, revolutionary or heretic, according to which temperament.